Welcome everyone to Flyover Footy on the big 550 KTRS. We are presented by Novalice Vineyards. We have a fun show. I mean, it's a little sad because it's a bye. It's a bye week show, but these shows can be especially fun because we don't have an agenda per se. I mean, we have some places we can visit here, but we're allowed to stray, and I'm excited about that. I'm back from Puerto Rico, and I had to work in this little tribute because CC and Santiago gave me some places to go. I did a lot of those, and if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that the Cookie Frogs are there, and you might have heard them in the background with Santiago doing his podcast from Puerto Rico. And so the toy that I brought back for one of my kids was a stuffed Cookie Frog that does the cookie. And so it's already broken. He already pushed the button too many times and it's broken. But I wanted to dedicate that to Santiago and CC for, you know, helping me have such a good time there. Enough about me, though, Matt. Now that I'm back from vacation, we got a job to do here. We got some things to talk about. But first, of course, how are you doing? What's new for you?
Fantastic. It's a bye week, so everything's a little weird, a little off between I just don't have anything to look forward to this weekend game-wise, and don't have the training days have been different. It's just been a little bizarre here, and it feels like we're just these spinning wheels for right now. But it's a nice time, as we were talking earlier, Phil, because we have this odd kind of bye week, seemingly random early in the season. And when you're in a league with 29 teams, you're going to have a team every week that just has a bye week, and they just so happens ours falls about a quarter of the way through a season. And it's nice in that regard because it breaks it up. We have this quarter season bye week. We'll have about halfway through the season, we've got League's Cup to look forward to, which will likely be a little bit of a break. And then we have some international break or international windows later on in the back half. So breaks it up there too. So we'll have some nice chances to touch on City and how they've been doing and progressing and comparisons to last year, trends, all kinds of fun looks like we're going to get into tonight.
Absolutely. And I don't want to bury the lead because I do think the biggest news, the biggest gossip that maybe we could even talk about tonight is that Sam Adeniran is back in training. I mean, that has to be for me the news of the week. Matt, you were the first one I saw on Twitter reporting that. And so spill the beans, man. What'd you see at training today?
Tuesday. Tuesday's a normal day.
Oh, not today. Sorry.
Yeah. So Wednesday was our first look at training this week. They had 3 days off, a little extra day earlier in the week, and showed up to training, walked in, and the group was already out. They got at it early on Wednesday, and Sam was out there amongst them doing the drills, team activities, acting as if nothing was different. And from our perspective, whatever had happened to get him on the field had already happened. Post training, we asked Carnell about that, and his quote both to Tom Timmerman and to me on a follow-up question was, Sam is back on the field training. And then I asked him on my follow-up, does this mean everything's behind you? Is there anything else that you could add about what might be going on? And he just said, Sam is back on the field. So they're leaving it at that. And everybody who wants, including us, who would like a little bit more insight or maybe a little bit more information on what's going on now and what the plan is for Sam, whether there are any carry forwards, we're out of luck. That's Carnell seems pretty drawn in on that as far as he's willing to go, which is good because, I mean, let's be honest, the one feedback that I mentioned last week on our show with Santi is that in giving the quote that Carnell gave and the details that he gave, framing it around the intensity and the pushing himself and being out there for his team, framing it around that definitely said something. And so now saying less is meaning more. I think keeping all of that internal and just giving the facts of what's out there does say a lot to, I think, working to mend whatever issues occurred in this relationship.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to take that, right? Like one could be that he doesn't want to air dirty laundry, though he did, I guess, in a way, not so subtle way, subtle and then not so subtle. And maybe also this is just part of the flipping of the new leaf. We don't have anything to talk about for good reason. But also, you know, I don't know if you weren't there. You were there, I mean. So, like, yeah. I'm curious how he delivered it because it almost feels like we're not talking about this. I'm still angry. This is something we're working on. Maybe he's not approving of Sam being back in training, but we need him. You know, like, these things, you guys know how I am. I overthink things, but, you know, it is a possibility. I mean, it's something worth mentioning.
It was very matter of
fact. Too much weight into. Yeah.
It was very matter of fact when he said it. And so there was nothing mannerism wise that I read into it. It was just very, this is what it is. And we're moving on.
Yep. Right on. I'm good with that. But I will overthink it. You can't stop my brain from overthinking that stuff.
Well, if you're going to overthink things, I think Edu Leuven's a good player to pivot to in overthinking because I really, my heart goes out to whatever's happening with Edu Leuven. The family medical emergency that Carnell referenced last week in why Edu Leuven had been missing games and training. And his quote this week was furthering that. Carnell said of Edu this week, quote, we treat totally different from the rest of the group right now. If his body's feeling up to it, he can progress as needed, but that's up to him. And we saw Edu Leuven at the beginning of training running on his own and then walking off as the team was still doing their team drills. He went back into the training facility. So Carnell still has the kid gloves on with Edu, being very soft, very, very gentle, comforting, parental almost with Edu in giving him time to do what he needs to do, get his head right, handle whatever's going on. And it's just such an unfortunate situation on top of the hamstring injury for him to deal with. And who knows when he's going to be ready or right or what issue has to be resolved for him to be able to focus on soccer, if that's even a possibility to fully focus on it, because I don't know that him being back at training indicates a resolution to whatever's happening. But regardless, my heart goes out to him and his family for whatever they're going through.
Yeah, I think things took a turn to the respectful level when, you know, Carnell said, I have permission to say this, right? Yeah. That he's going through something personal. And even the way it's phrased, if his body's feeling up to it, he can progress as needed, but that's up to him.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't just do that because, you know, no special treatment because he's a DP, right? That's just not the way this team rolls. No. It just feels like there's something pretty big.
That's
going
not an
on.
Injury. Comment. I don't feel like that's not something he said about Josh Yarrow and Jabulu Blom, who are also recovering from hamstring injuries. Right. It was very much for Josh Yarrow. It was very much fact of the matter. Same with Jabulu Blom. He said Josh Yarrow is starting on-field work in terms of his rehab and integration with running and mobility. Yarrow is still doing straight line stuff, linear, but he's progressing. So Yarrow with that hamstring injury, he's not pivoting. He's not moving horizontally. And Carnell said they're not going to rush him. Similar with Jabulu Blom, who's starting his on-field work, but Carnell did say that Blom is the closest one to returning. And that's insightful because also the previous timeline that he gave was 2 to 4 weeks for Blom and just at least 4 for Josh Yarrow. But those two in particular is letter of the law, talking about the injury, giving the updates, they're working on fitness. But you could see the difference, not just in Sam and Edu, but Edu and Yarrow and Blom, who are going through hamstring injuries as well.
Indeed. And Yarrow being out is like a thing now because he did work himself into such good form there before the injury. And so that's something I look forward to. And perhaps Jabulo will be needed by the end of the season badly. I mean, I could see that happening. And there were times last season where we just felt like he was saving us on the field, and the system worked very well with him in it in a different way, right? Because we're looking so different this season. And so who knows what this season's going to bring. We were just talking about what you can do with and without DPs and who it's more important to in the pregame here offline. And I mean, Jabulo being in there, if Leuven and Klaus are gone, it could become something very important. So something to watch there for sure. Getting those guys healthy and making them useful again. Yarrow, especially for me, is high on the list.
Just another benefit of the bye week, right? So not just break for everybody, but for those players in particular, like a reset chance because it's a tough stretch coming out of this against Houston, Chicago, LAFC, Cincinnati, Seattle, and then into Miami. That's a pretty rough stretch, regardless of the form some of these teams have been in. And we are going to need that depth, especially with 5 matches in May, 6 in June. Like, it's going to escalate quickly and no more breaks until League's Cup.
And we talked about this too in our DMs. And I think going back to the Sam and Klaus thing is, you know, how much do we really want to ride Klaus for the rest of the season, right? Having Sam back to me is really ideal, right? I'm really glad he's back. Drama aside, it would be nice to be able to roll with Sam a lot more than we have the last couple weeks, of course, with him being not in training and not in the 18. So I really hope Sam gets himself back in contention for starting even, you know, from time to time with these double game weeks that are going to be coming up in the next couple months. So that's what I'm voting for. If a sale needs to happen, Matt, you were saying that he needs to play. His contract's up in December, at the end of December, right? Is that correct?
Yep. Sam's contract runs through the end of the calendar year. That's how the MLS contracts are structured. So if Sam's going to be sold, whether it's the summer or after the season, he's going to need to play. And Klaus can't be expected to play 90 minutes every match. Nuki Thorsson has shown like he's a good change of pace, but he also provides something incredibly different. And we've seen Sam both with Klaus and on his own with guys like AZ, with Indiana Vasilev, and there's a place for him. There might even be matchup based opportunities that we can leverage depending on what you need from your attackers and how you look to progress your offense through them, because they're vastly different attackers, Klaus and Sam. And so it's not necessarily a given that every single game and game state will make sense to have Klaus run 60, 70 plus.
You're listening to Flyover Footy on the Big 550 KTRS. We are presented by Noble Ice Vineyards. Thank you for joining us today as we kind of get you up to date on some of the news during a bye week. This is a bye weekend, but this is a good opportunity to take a look at how the season has gone so far. And maybe even we can compare it to last season. Matt, I know you've got some bullet points we can touch on. Why don't you get us started?
Yeah, the first thing is just where we sit. You know, I've been starting our midweek show here recently that gives a good picture into where we are in terms of statistics league-wide and giving a picture on some of the other teams. But as it stands now, we are tied for seventh in points. We're ninth in the table in the West with 12 points, 2-1-6 record, 2 wins, 1 loss, 6 draws. And we're going to talk about some of the comparisons to last season in the way that the season started. Obviously you had the 5 wins in a row last year and that didn't happen. But one key thing to keep in mind that's going to be a theme as we look to how this season has started is our ability to take losses and turn them into draws. We have more draws through nine games than we did through the entire season last year. We had 5 total last year. We have 6 now through 9 games, but through the first 9 games in 2023, we also had 2 losses. So we already have fewer losses now, despite the fact that we're drawing more games. The goal differentials reflect similarly, where right now we have 15 goals for, 14 goals against. Last year at this time, we had 24 goals for, 10 goals against. So the goal differential is vastly different. But at the same time, we're doing what it takes to keep these losses from being losses. We're turning them into draws. We might not be finishing like we want to yet, but that's the mark of a longevity of a team to me, is that you're not this flash in the pan. You're not striking while the teams don't know what you're throwing at them. And then they're figuring you out like last year happened. That's a pretty clear storyline that occurred last year, but you're sticking to your same style that we're going to get into some of the numbers that show this. But end of the day, I think a lot of the evolution that is 2024 St. Louis City has allowed us to remain in games that we otherwise would have been blown out last year. Whether it was a team like Minnesota that threw a low block at us last year, gave us our first loss, or Seattle that just owned us when it came to their ability to possess and break us down. Like, we're not being overrun in any way, shape, or form. And we're going to hear from Bradley Carnell here in a little bit on how he thinks some of these moments go. But yeah, I just see how we're starting off this season as very measured, I would say, compared to what we did last year on both sides of the spectrum, having great runs and having really frustrating runs at times. This has been a very measured start to the season, and it's kind of aligned with some of those expectations in how we came into the season. But right now, where we're sitting tied seventh, we are definitely a little less than when it comes to how some of the experts picked us. So looking at MLSsoccer.com, if you remember, a lot of the analysts had some respect for us going into this year, with Andrew Wiebe famously being the person who picked us lowest in the table at 12th. Most of the analysts had us in that 3-6 range. There's some outliers either way, but 3-6 is where they saw us coming in. And so if we're sitting tied for seventh in points, and we started off the season with CONCACAF Champions Cup, We've dealt with the injury to Edu Leuven. We've had the issue with Sam. We had issues scoring goals in general for a short period of time there. And now we're coming through this with the last few games. I would go back to FC Dallas, then Austin, and then Sporting KC, as you can see a positive trend developing here that's taking us out of, I think the lowest we got was 10th place in these first nine games, into the sweet spot of the 3-6.
I agree. And to kind of throw a couple things I saw today in there about, you know, just to touch on some of the things you said, Matt, that, you know, things are moving a little slower, maybe a slower start, maybe the finishing isn't there. Some other thoughts are that I do think that, you know, having Leuven out is a thing, right? That's not something to shrink at. But also the fact that we're adding more facets to our game, and that facet being possessing the ball, breaking down what could be bunkered defenses that might be thrown at us more often this year as teams game plan against us more. There was almost no game planning last year. I said it multiple times. I couldn't believe there were more teams bunkering against us. Well, now there are teams doing that on purpose. This really cool graphic, Justin Hornacker found one from Ben Wright on X today from FB Ref, saying how often do teams get on the ball in the penalty area? It was meant for Nashville, who's last in the league. Mm-hmm. But third in the league is St. Louis City. And that's in second place is DC United. In first place is Atlanta United. So Atlanta United, possession-based team. Okay, fine. Let's look at DC United and St. Louis City. Those are not two teams that I would have expected or guessed or bet on being in the top 10 of touches in a penalty area. But I think that's, to me, one of my first thoughts was, I don't know if you have other thoughts too, Matt, was that those are two teams that are being game planned against, that they are clearly coming out. They're going to press high. And teams are bunkering against them in order to just prove that you can score on us, kind of a thing. And so I think that's phase one for me, is that we are being game planned against, and there's another facet being added. I think the second thought is that second facet being added, or whatever facet added, is a possession-based breaking down of a bunkered team, which is very difficult. And it's not something that we talk about other teams doing this to us, you know, KC looking terrible in the beginning of last year, but, you know, being able to pass through our press at times at the end of the season, that's something that really comes on at the end of the season. You're going to see the fruit of your labor really show, hopefully, at the end of the season. It's up there with that whole the broken record of peaking at the right time in MLS, being an American playoff model. So just all those things combined with what you said, Matt, that, you know, maybe it is a slow start. Maybe it's Leuven. Maybe it's just not the finishing there. I think that you got to throw on the list there that there are teams game planning against us. And also if plan A, plan B doesn't work, plan C isn't going to really peak till the end of the season.
Yeah. And again, looking at the evolution of St. Louis City and how they are compared to last year, the stat you mentioned of number of touches in the box, it's not just big because it shows where we play most often, but that goes along hand in hand with a stat like the number of key passes, which are passes that lead directly to a shot. St. Louis City this year is second in MLS, in all of MLS, behind LAFC in key passes. And looking last year where they ended the table, it was squarely in the middle of the pack on key passes. So they just weren't as efficient in creating the opportunities for shots. And likewise, in total shots, they're second in the league behind LAFC. So this is a team that's taking advantage of that volume. And a few games ago, we were frustrated because we were having games like FC Dallas where we were having 27 shots and no goals. And so volume isn't always king, but if you're putting yourselves in that position consistently, and you can actually start now through nine games to see that that's not just a flash in the pan on, you have a big game against Dallas and then the rest are just stinkers. You're having consistency to be second in the league in some of these key categories in the chance creation, in shot creation. And that's something that last year St. Louis City just couldn't really call their own. And the way that we're doing this in connecting our lines, not just sending the ball over and hoping to create one shot, one pass after a long ball to Klaus, like things are clicking a little better to be more clinical in possessing the ball in the final third. So the number of touches, the number of key passes in the final third in the penalty box, all leading to, I think, turning a lot of these opportunities that St. Louis has. And that's a good sign that they're carrying into it. And when you're having the consistency that we're having in lineups lately, that's something else that drives this, because it's the same guys asked to do the same role who are performing these tasks. It's not just getting lucky, so to speak, with tossing in a new group of players in a rotated match, and then they just go off and you're able to ride that hot streak. You're building off of players like Indiana Vasilev. You're building off of Rasmus Alm up front, seeing Celio Pompeu really take a next step this year into what he's able to do. And that consistency without Edu Luvin in the midfield is enabling some of this progression of the ball, not to mention just the high caliber wing play that we've seen from Thomas Totland. So it's building in all these ways that are leading to these underlying numbers, telling good stories about where St. Louis is trending after 9 games.
Yeah. And, you know, worryometer. I don't know what podcast always talked about that I used to listen to. It sounds like you and I, Matt, are both agreeing that it's like very low, right? We're not worried right now. Yeah. Things are looking good. Lots of potential, more potential than there is worries for me.
It's true. And that's a good place to be in 9 games in after having the start that we did with Champions Cup, getting bounced out early, not finding a good rhythm afterwards, and just taking a few weeks to get settled down. We're now at a point where we're seeing the goals fall. Klaus is now in goal scoring form. The consistency in lineup in progression is there. And Carnell has to be overall happy, I think, through his first almost 2 full blocks of games. And that's, for me, a fun way to look at this, because Carnell has said that they look at this season 2024 in blocks of 5 games. Last year, he had said 6, or at times maybe 6 or 7. But this year, he said very clearly 5. And so we can measure what the success that they're looking at based on these 5 games. And so in trying to figure out whether St. Louis City looks at this season as positively as we do after 9 games, where especially how they're trending, I tend to think that yes. And I've been trying to look into these blocks of games and what Carnell has said to try and figure out, maybe we can try to guess what their actual goals are for these blocks of games, or for the entire season for that matter. And what I came up with, Phil, is kind of fascinating. Carnell said after the first block that they were a couple points off where they wanted to be. I need to go back to the tape because I'm almost positive he said a couple. It was either a couple, 2 or 3. So if you're after 5 games and you're 2 or 3 points down from where you want to be, that might have put them at the time at 2 wins, 2 draws, and a loss. I think that would have been on target for St. Louis City after those first 5 games. So if you take the number of points that would equal after a single block and you average it out for the rest of the season, it tells me that overall this season, Carnell is probably, when you put all the blocks together, looking to target a 52-plus point total on the season. What does that mean in the standings? Because you're not just going for an arbitrary point total and saying, okay, I think that'll put us in a good spot. I think when Carnell's saying they're on track or they're a little behind in their blocks, and we might never hear about this after I'm trying to analyze him again. We may never hear him give us this insight based on this. So I'm sorry about this already. I think Carnell's goal at the end of the season, based on what he said earlier, is a top 4 finish. Because 52 points historically puts a team in the Western Conference on track for a top 4 finish. And so if you're measuring yourself as where we want to be after each block, that's what I think Carnell's looking to. It's not just necessarily we don't want to be in tied for 7th after our 2nd block. It's the fact that the point total that you're going to have cumulatively after each block is going to add up to that top 4 finish. And there's probably, I'll caveat this myself, there's probably a lot more that goes into that, like the quality of opponents. Maybe you're looking to get more points in a specific block based on who you're playing. There's a lot more that probably goes into it. But I think that's a fairly high level way that we can look at this and try to measure our success as we see it versus how the club is probably viewing this.
We're going to put this right under the Lutz, was it 3-year plan, 5-year plan?
5-year plan.
How did I get that wrong? So they'll love us if we keep bringing this up. But I love that, Matt. I think even if that's not what he is thinking or saying, I think it's actually just like a nice insight to, you know, if that is what he was saying,
yeah,
that's what the outcome would be. Looking at what typically happens in MLS, really good digging there, Matt. We got to push things along. I would love to see, are we going to do this Durkan video? I think we should jump to that if
yeah, possible. when we're talking about how things are trending, I was able to talk to Chris Durkan this week and try to get his insight into how he feels the season has been progressing. So we have a clip to listen to Chris Durkan on how he feels the season has been going so far.
Overall thoughts on the season so far? St. Louis has just two wins, but you've seemed to be grinding out some of those draws that you turn losses into draws. So how would you categorize the season so far?
Yeah, I would say it's, I think we've continued to grow each game. I think you look at our Salt Lake game, that was our worst game of the season so far. And, in the first half of that game, I thought we were really good. So I don't think we've put a lot of bad stuff on film, in my opinion. There's been some lapses in, focus and mistakes. But as a team, I think we're doing well. And, for being such a high-pressing team to have such, I think good defensive shape and limiting so many shots, I think is a really good testament to the entire team that defensively we're getting a lot better. So I think we're in a really good way, and I think our attack is starting to flourish a little bit more now. So I'm really excited for the games to come.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it, Chris.
I think Chris says it all there, and he kind of reinforces what we're seeing from the outside is that they too feel like they're gaining momentum. They feel like things are clicking on both sides of the ball, and that's exciting to see. For a team where, Durkan's a new guy to the team and he was brought in to be an anchor to our midfield in a lot of ways. We paid a lot of money for Chris Durkan as far as MLS contracts go, giving away two key players from last year, one of our leading goal scorers, and $300,000 in GAM. So Chris Durkan has been playing a key role in all this, and it's good to see his perspective thinking we're trending positively.
I don't know if I loved watching our midfield last year because it felt like, collect the ball, send it to Lubin, and then Lubin does work, right? That felt like the formula last year. And this year, Matt, the first week we played, your first thoughts were like that midfield rotation. These guys are moving, they're passing the ball. There's, and I agree. It's been so much more fun to watch St. Louis City this year. And I think Durkan is the hinge, the linchpin on that. I love it. We're getting lots of love for Durkan. He's got a bit of more of a baby face than I realized. You've got that nice camera and we got a nice good look at him there. A nice friendly smile at the end. Who's not loving Durkan right now?
He stepped much closer to my camera phone than I expected him to. So that's why if you're watching the live stream, or I'll put this up on YouTube if you're listening to us on the podcast. But yeah, it was a nice close conversation, and he just seems like he's very genuine, very down to earth. And you probably saw that from the clip about the Earth Day sustainability thing with Indiana Vasilev that the club posted. It's very noticeable that he's loving his role in St. Louis. So
Chris Gebhardt says Kansas isn't loving Durkan, Phil. And that's a good point.
No, he had one of the two great shoulder to shoulder moments. And I want that. I want to see more of that. I love Durkin's physicality in how he plays too. It's fantastic. Now, one of the things too, I'm going to play a clip from Bradley Carnell here in a moment, because Chris Durkan reinforced a couple of those defensive lapses that we had talked about, where Bradley Carnell in the past few weeks has really honed in on being proud of our offensive performance and playing complete games. Austin was a complete game. FC Dallas, he felt like we created so many chances. We just didn't get the luck and the drops that we needed to. SKC, we had three goals, obviously, so we were creating those chances. But SKC is also a good example of how at least two of those goals were defensive lapses that I don't think we should have made if maybe Joachim Nielsen had been there, if our defense and our backline hadn't cheated and allowed Eric Tommy to run in behind them. And so I asked Bradley Carnell, how do you work on some of those individual moments in allowing those goals when everything else is going so well? You say you're having such a complete performance, but how do you work on some of those individual moments? And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, we sometimes we ask, is it a systematic failure or a failure? I wouldn't even call it a failure. You know, is it system-oriented or is it individual-oriented? And then there's even a group orientation. You know, is it two or three around the ball or, you know, on the weak side or what have you? So we look at all those and, you know, we discuss it in film, we show video, we send the guys some game debriefs, you know, whatever it is, the coaches work behind the scenes to pull players in and show them, you know, some of the individual moments where they could do better, some of the group moments. So, again, we're always asking questions, and I don't think anyone asks any harder questions than us as coaches and staff. So, again, it's an exciting thing to be part of because we see so many clear moments for us and really promising, and we feel we're not far off from like total performances, you know.
Phil, my biggest takeaway there is when he referenced looking at groups of players, because it's not he's talked before about when I asked him about Anthony Markkanen a few weeks ago, he took it much higher than that and said, well, if we're leaving Markkanen on an island, something else has gone wrong. If we're putting him out there in bad positions, don't just look at Markkanen, look at the few seconds before that, the buildup before that. And so for him to reference groups of players, maybe like a triangle when it comes to a fullback, a midfielder, and a bat and a center back, something like that, where they're not working collectively and well enough. I think that's an interesting way to put perspective on some of those lapses in moments that I was mentioning.
There are just so many beautiful coaching moments for Carnell. Yeah, we do get some coach speak, but I do think he tries to give us stuff as often as he can while protecting his players, which is first priority. And, you know, just hearing him say what you said there, Matt, I love that. Like he's saying groups of people so that it's also like, there's no selling a player down the river. I love what he said about Markkanen. And I mean, I agreed with it before he said it, but there's just this tendency on Twitter, of course, is to just blame a player for missing something. We're hearing a lot about it with like Scally, right? In that Jamaica game and missing something when he was clearly double teamed and there was nothing he could have done right in that scenario, but he's taking the blame. I just love hearing Carnell do that kind of thing. And even when he, you know, slipped and said, failures. And he said, no, there's no failures. And that's just like ingrained in him. And this is just like level one, right? This is just like him, just normal conversation saying something, but then, you know, that goes to multiple levels when it comes to coaching. So I just really enjoy, like, this man was clearly made to coach. Like I said, there's no selling players down the river. There's admitting of blame within him, within groups of players, within the system, you know, and it's all part of the formula. And I love hearing him talk about that, that, you know, there's a solution to everything and there's no one answer to any solution. You know, it's like, these are the sorts of things that we're getting from Carnell as a coach, I think. And I just, you know, he just displayed it perfectly in that clip you got there, Matt. I love it.
Yeah. And I think this is becoming a hallmark of Bradley Carnell, not just in how he defends players and how he rises above a lot of the talk that occurs in, you know, individual blames that go on. It's more collective. It's more system. You know, it's looking higher picture. It's looking at things through different lenses. And I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen so much consistency year over year now. So we're into year two, nine games into year two. And yeah, I've referenced an evolution to St. Louis City a lot in how their style of play is. But if you get back down to it, if you look at some of the underlying numbers, like the PPDA passes per defensive action, you look at some play style numbers and how the sequences are built up, the numbers are strikingly similar to me from 2020-23. It's not that we're doing it the exact same way, but from getting from where maybe the ball is with Berkey or with Parker up to Klaus or AZ or Sam or whoever, and then getting a shot off, a lot of these numbers and how our press is working are very similar. So I looked at passes per defensive action numbers, which indicate the amount of passes that we allow other teams before we make a play on the ball. And all of MLS is getting a little better. They're getting a little more press happy. But if you look at St. Louis specifically, last year we allowed 10.2 passes per defensive action. That's the number of passes on average before we made a play on the ball. And that's against all competitions and against all types of teams. 10.2 through nine games this year. Guess what number we're at? 10.2. The exact same. So if you look at, you can say that we had a great start to last year, that we fell off at the end of last year, that teams adapted to us, but our underlying press has been operating shockingly consistent compared to last year. And when you talk about how we progress the ball, we've definitely put more of a focus on possessing the ball. Our possession numbers are much more all over the board than they were last year. They're up and down, sub and positive 50% just about every other game, but we're grinding out these draws. And so I looked at, you know, these sequence times. Something, another stat that we talk about all the time on Flyover Footy is the overall average sequence time of where you have possession of the ball, the passes per sequence, and the time for direct speed. So St. Louis in 2023 was obviously one of the top teams with the New York Red Bulls in all three of those categories. We were one of the fastest sequence times. We had one of the fewest passes per sequence, and we were one of the most direct teams as far as speed goes. This year, we are in the exact same position, if not more so, in every single one of those. So look at the number of times we've possessed the ball. Our sequence time is the quickest in the entire league. We're even quicker than we were last year, 6.92 seconds versus 6.38. On average, we progress the ball up the field faster than we did last year through these first nine games. Passes per sequence, we're sitting almost the exact same number as we were last year in volume of passes per sequence before we either turn the ball over or get a shot off or whatever. Direct speed, we are a slight hair. I'm talking just a couple milliseconds longer in the direct speed, but it's still the third fastest team in the league in progressing the ball up the field. These are crazy numbers in how consistent this team has been to last year, when the eye test might tell you that we're possessing the ball more in some games here and there. But look at the game here recently. I think it was against, I want to say FC Dallas, but we had like a 37% possession number. It was an unreal number that was so low. And I think that speaks to how in any given game, it was Austin, we had 38. In the LA Galaxy, we had 34. So in adapting to these teams, which I think is part of the evolution, we're able to adapt to teams like DC United, who play a very similar style, but we were able to get the draw out with 57% possession. So there's nuances in like what players they have available that caused some frustration after that match. But taking it back a step, in we can play with the ball, we can play against the ball, but it's averaging out to be the same St. Louis City that overall we know and love from last year, and how quickly they get the ball up the field and then producing all of those shots and key passes that we talked about earlier.
I think the craziest thing, I think this is what you're getting at, Matt, and I'm sorry if I missed your main point there, but that the fact that we can keep those numbers, those pressing numbers the same, those attacking numbers as quick as they are, while still having more possession, to me is wild. Yes. That's the part. Combining those two almost is like unfathomable. But I do think it does also compare to like what I was saying earlier, is like, we are being forced to do different things based on what teams are giving us in game flow situations. And so it's just so nice that there is that last option to do it. But again, to keep it fast is incredible to me. I don't know how it's happening, but it is nice that we have another year and another progression of this team, that our principles are there and they're ingrained, right? And we are just able to float extra stuff on top now, because it is so ingrained in the players that have been here, and Dirk can fit right in quickly. So, and the fullbacks too, honestly. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and on Durkin, let's look at the last video we had with Durkin, because let's shift to the player discussion and where we're each going to give our ideal starting 11 right now as we look to wrap up the show this week, I think, Phil. What Durkin said, I asked him about his role with St. Louis City, how he's been playing with Tomas Ostrak, and I'll just let his words speak for themselves.
I think we, are obviously extremely high-pressing team at times, and there's a lot of gaps to fill, and I want to be that guy that just helps fill those gaps. As a six, I've spoken about with other guys, it's about putting out a lot of small fires so that we don't have big ones. So I've really been enjoying that role. I mean, against the Austin game, there wasn't a ton of running. And, you look at a game like LA or a game like Sporting, and then there's a lot. So it's just game by game as well.
And then talk about Tomas Ostrak and how your partnership with him has progressed. And during the game, it kind of feels like you guys switch on and off the six and the eight. How has that been managing during the game with Tomas?
Yeah, it's been great just to learn more about him on the field. Obviously, a great guy off the field. I think if you look back at like our DC United game, both of us were going way too much at the same time. So we've definitely learned a lot more about each other. And it's required me just to be the guy that holds a little bit more. So Ostrak has that, that creativity. productivity that we want from him up near the 18, up near their goal. So he's been doing a great job. And, you know, at times I can go when I feel like he's staying. But for the most part, I think with our partnership, I have to be the one that stays back. And I've been happy with that.
You're listening to Flyover Footy on the Big 550 KTRS, sponsored by Noble Ice Vineyards. Thank you so much for joining us here. You just heard from Chris Durkin in how he feels like they've progressed in his partnership with both Tomas Ostrak and overall how his fit in the system has been. So, Phil, what was your biggest takeaway from that?
I think I expected that kind of thing to be said. I am so, so happy to hear him say that we tried to do the same thing at the same time against DC, because we saw that, right? And I think we've also been like, Ostrak needs to find his place. It's nice that Durkin's kind of saying we both were part of that. Mm-hmm. And that clearly they worked on it, and clearly it's looking better week by week, in my opinion. I think every week it's looking better.
So for the best starting 11 that we could possibly run out now, we're obviously missing Yarrow, Blome, Leuven. Sam is healthy, so he's in the mix. But if you look at without Leuven, Yarrow, and Blome, is our best 11 what we've seen the past two games against Austin and SKC?
With healthy players?
With the players we have available right now. So not counting Edu, Yarrow, or Blome.
Yeah, I think it was the first repeated starting 11, wasn't it, too? So
I think it might have been the second one, but I think it was the most effective repeated starting 11.
I agree. Don't you think so?
I do. If I had to pick a starting 11 right now, I would run this group back until they proved otherwise. Looking at players like AZ and Nukvi Thorsen, I think their place is what it is right now. And you can't look at needing to manage minutes and get guys playing time when you're gelling so well offensively. Now, a player that we haven't talked about at all, almost just because he's healthy and Carnell's looking to slot him in as soon as he can on the other side of this bye week, is Joachim Nilsson. So I consider Nilsson as healthy now and in that starting 11. So my best 11 has Anthony Markkanen at left back, Joachim Nilsson, Tim Parker, Thomas Totlin making up the back line, Chris Durkin, Tomas Ostrak in the midfield, Saliu Pompeiu, Indiana Vasilev, Rasmus Alm on the attacking mids, and Klaus. Healthy, though, that introduces to me only one change, and that's Edu Leuven. I plug Edu Leuven in for Tomas Ostrak when he's healthy. Everybody else stays exactly where they are.
I think the most unexpected player in that lineup, and Josh Zeller said it, Cilio is the breakout player of the year so far. Like, I would never have thought he would be anything but an impact sub this season. I mean, maybe next season I think he could have worked himself in as a starter, but now I think he's like a dead-on starter for us, and I couldn't agree more with your lineup there.
And Anthony Markkanen too. That's a battle that we expected to be a lot more back and forth, but the only time Anthony Markkanen has really shown something negative or a big issue was against the LA Galaxy for me. And Joseph Paintsill just dominated Anthony Markkanen. And Joseph Paintsill has been called by The Athletic and others as the best DP signing of the entire league this year.
Article has mentioned him as the best signing. Yeah.
And so that, whether it's a fair comparison to say, okay, if you can't handle Paintsill, then you can't be our starting left back for City. I think that's too far.
Yeah.
But Markkanen has done a pretty remarkable job. And also I would credit Chris Durkin with helping out on that. So it's not a coincidence to me that not just Thomas Totlin is having a fantastic time at fullback, but Anthony Markkanen is performing well when you have Chris Durkin at the defensive midfield position doing what he's doing.
Completely agree. And this is like what a lot of people were wanting us to talk more about. It's kind of funny. We agree maybe too much because there's not a big conversation here. Guys, Kian in the chat here. But I mean, what do we need to talk about the transfer window? I think is like the only way we can kind of upgrade this lineup.
Because that's where we are, you know, talking about how things have progressed this season. We're at a spot where the trends all equal coalescing around an ideal starting 11. And there's a lot of consensus. Yeah. I want to see more of Nicholas Dewar too, but right now Anthony Markkanen is our starting left back. I want to see Edu Leuven pop in this lineup as soon as possible, but I'm still happy with Tomas Ostrak in that spot, and it's his spot until Leuven comes back. Attacking-wise, Salio with his speed on the left, Alm with his speed on the right, the guy who clocked greater than 20 miles per hour on a single run earlier this year in Rasmus Alm, he's fully healthy for the first time in his St. Louis City career. That's exciting. Keep him on the field. The way that we're playing the ball through Klaus works with everybody around him. He is the ideal playmaker in that number nine role to both hold up the line as well as finish with the guys around him. And so there's no reason to change anything. And that's why it's kind of a mundane conversation, because it is what it is. And I saw Josh Zeller, credit to him for what he posted on Twitter, because his ideal lineup matches what we said. And he even included some of the subs like AZ and Thorson coming in at certain times. That provides a great change of pace. But you're right. The primary transfer window in MLS is now closed. It closed on April 23rd. St. Louis City made no moves despite the rumors of the striker action. And so when I look to what we're going to do this summer, I look to the striker position. I don't know that we have a massive need anywhere else with the injuries not being a factor. So however they sit at the midpoint of the season with injuries, that could play if we need another midfielder, if we need another center back. But Michael Wenzel is our center back in waiting. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go out and jump to buy another center back when you have Kyle Hebert and presumably healthy Josh Yarrow at some point around the corner, and Michael Wenzel is waiting in the wings. So whether or not Tim Parker comes back next year, that's conversation for the end of the season. Joachim Nielsen's under contract. We have Kyle Hebert. We have Michael Wenzel waiting. I don't see a need for that position. It's striker first, foremost, and almost only right now for me.
Not for me. I think with the rule changes coming and people being able to sign more players, I think St. Louis is going to need to pick up a striker, because I don't know what the heck's going on with the Sam situation, but I wouldn't mind having three strikers or making sure that it's easy to sell Sam if the opportunity comes up. Either of those things. I think a striker is non-debatable now. Like St. Louis,
agreed.
The world knows that St. Louis has to buy a striker, and I'm actually worried the price has gone up for us in some ways because of that. But the other thing is, like, I think with this higher competition in MLS, St. Louis is going to have to spend more. I don't think they're going to have much choice. I know the designated team thing is real. It's awesome. But I just think there needs to be someone else that's going to assist this team in possession going forward against a bunker defense, like someone that just specializes in that. Someone like Nukvi Thorsen, perhaps someone that plays in a different role, like a 9.5 or a attacking midfielder, maybe not a starting player, maybe a U22 initiative to me sounds perfect. Like someone with a big high upside, but someone with different skills than we're seeing from AZ, different from even Vasilev, that can play in that position, perhaps that's good in a tight spot, good at passing, good at key passes, good at assisting, maybe scoring a goal if it falls to him and not missing, you know, like these are things that are really important when there's just a bunker defense and every team sucks against that kind of thing. So that's what I'll say is, yes, striker is a must now. You can't question that, but I will say that I think we need another, you know, U22 type player.
Tukert seems like the obvious one. Cedric Tukert will be a free agent, so we'd be able to get him on a free. That immediately makes the price tag palatable, and it fits the
money. And the cap hit better too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's something, that kind of thing. A free agent, a guy on the end of his contract who's in his 20s, I think that's what we're going to be looking towards. And it's hard to pick any other additional player because Lutz has his guys, for lack of a better term, and they're probably going to come from Western Europe or Scandinavia based on history. I mean, he's got a pretty good track record of bringing guys in from that area of the world right now. But I do want to see more of utilization of the U22s. That's a constant theme. I'm willing to give leeway to bring in the right guys, but right now Chris Durkin is our only player on a U22 contract. With the MLS rule changes, right now we'd have three more U22 spots available. That's absurd, in addition to the $2 million in GAM. Yeah. Take advantage of it when you can.
Yeah, I'd say spread the GAM to the designated team and use the U22. Like, use it. My goodness, use that. Matt, we joked about before we started the show that Santiago is spending time in Florida, and so we've traded one Colombian for another, haven't we? Can you tell us about our new signing? Because that could come into play, too, in the coming year.
Yeah, it depends on how much you think St. Louis is going to be moving players from City 2 up to City, because we talked about Michael Wenzel.
Don't get me started on MLS rule changes.
Oscar Benitez has been signed to St. Louis City 2. He's a Colombian. He has a youth career in Brazil. He is a Brazilian U20 player, and he comes on the contract through the duration of 2024. So what that means for City 2 they've kind of found a pretty good rhythm of their roster themselves under head coach Bobby Murphy in their second year, and they're now climbing up to, I think, second place in the West. They've had a tremendous growth since their first loss and only loss to the beginning of the season. Now, Benitez comes in. He had the fanfare of the announcement. He had the fanfare of Lutz giving him some social media posts dedicated to his arrival. the future for him will be interesting. He projects, it looks like, as a central defensive midfielder or a center back. So in the central defensive part of the field, and what he could provide, maybe this is a trial just to bring him on and make sure he is what we think he is before we offer him some other type of a contract. That's going to be interesting to watch, see how quickly he progresses, because he lines up with some of the other summer transfer talk in that, if you remember last year with Nukvi Thorsson especially, he didn't produce for us at the end of the season. And that has been said over and over and over by both Bradley Carnell and Lutz Fennesteel, is that that's by design. You bring in players in the summer, not for them to make an immediate impact, but for the long-term plan. That's going to be tough for a lot of City fans, I think, to get to wrap their head around based on how this season is progressing. So having lost Nico Gioacchini at the beginning of the season, we're talking about Sam transferring. We just had the issue with Sam, so that's made this issue at striker even more raw. The fact that we might bring in a striker in the summer and not have them make an immediate impact is going to be a difficult thing to realize, but that would be following the trends that we've seen from Bradley and Lutz. So I mentioned that on Benitez because he's coming in April. He has a contract for the rest of the year. I don't know how quickly he's going to acclimate or make an impact or start. So these kinds of things are in the back of my mind always when it comes to bringing on new players.
Agree. Matt, let's wrap this up. Let's look forward from this point on. You give your thoughts. I will maybe touch up a little tiny take, if at all, after this, but please give your thoughts on where we go from here.
Correct me if I need correcting. City has a closed door scrimmage this weekend with the grass being torn up in City Park. It's likely on the training fields. And Carnell has hinted at wanting to use this as an opportunity to get guys more minutes, to have your Jake Nowinski's, your Nicholas Dewar's get more minutes for them, because our first midweek match is coming up against LAFC on May 15th. That's going to be our third match out of this break. Midweek matches mean we're going to see rotation, whether it's against LAFC or whether it's against Cincinnati after that. One of those games are going to need to have Jake Nowinski, Nicholas Dewar, and others play. AZ is going to start. Sam's going to start. You're going to see all of these guys. And this closed-door scrimmage, probably bringing up some players from City 2, maybe the Academy, maybe Carson Locker gets some time. That's what it's designed to do, is keep legs fresh and introduce playing minutes for some of the guys who haven't seen minutes lately.
Good stuff. Love that. Look forward to it. That's it from us today, guys. We went a little over, but I think we're gonna figure that out. No problem for the radio show. We've got the full show on the podcast, no matter what. We're Flyover Footy. You're listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS. Thank goodness for the Big 550 KTRS. All the best, the most soccer coverage that you can find on any individual station that exists in St. Louis. We're also presented by Noble Ice Vineyards. And so we've been really happy with that addition this season. I just have one thought here, and that is that Flyover Footy in no way endorses staking out the training fields for a closed door friendly. So make sure you don't do that. That's it from us, though. Thank you for listening again. We'll talk to you next week.
Go City. We'll be right back.